Hey, it's the FinTech Newscast. My name is John, and with me this week is Steve.
John.
Sean.
Johnny, how are you? It's been a minute.
Good. Hey, so let's talk about what's been going on lately in the news. We haven't gotten everyone caught up, especially with the cryptocurrency, DeFi, and, well, specifically Bitcoin news. Actually, Ray Dalio, famous investor at Bridgewater, with over $100 billion in assets. I think they're the largest hedge fund, actually.
They are, or they used to be. I think he's also the richest man in Connecticut, which is saying something as well.
That's that's almost the whole U.S., right? But yeah, more than $100 billion in assets in any case. And he said just today that he really disagrees with Cathie Wood's prediction of Bitcoin hitting 500,000 within 5 years. And he actually goes the other way. He says, quote, "I think at the end of the day, if it's really successful, regulators will try to kill it. So there'd be some chance that Bitcoin would go to a much lower price." And his point is that they don't want competition for fiat government issued money.
Before we dig in, quick poll for both of you, John and Sean. 500,000 or 5,000 for Bitcoin in the next 5 years? John, you go first.
Yep, on the upside. Closer
on
to
the upside, though. On the upside. Yeah. Sean?
Yeah. I always hesitate to make price predictions. I actually personally don't like making price predictions because it's just, I get the fun of it, but.
Take a swing. Just take a swing. Just go for it.
Take a swing like the Giants did last night beating the Padres. I would say, I mean, closer to the, you know, I'd agree with John to a higher number. But again, I mean, it's more about, I think the important metric is to look at, like, who's buying into crypto. Like, you got JP Morgan, Goldman, PayPal, MasterCard, all these big players, Visa, are coming in by the troves, not just the small investments. They're building out whole teams. So
El Salvador.
Even countries, exactly. Yeah. Bitcoin Beach. I mean, you heard about Bitcoin Beach, and maybe Ray Dalio should go down to Bitcoin Beach and catch some waves. You know, he could get on the Bitcoin wave. It's not too late. But
what's Bitcoin Beach?
So Bitcoin Beach is this area in El Salvador that accepts Bitcoin as legal tender. So you can go into shops there, grab a coffee, pay for it in Bitcoin. And it's really interesting to see this as kind of one of the first big use cases of crypto in the public sector. So this is like government sanctioned crypto, a great use case for it.
I thought it was the whole country then that, or they're ready. They have the technology and everything in place already. That's the difference.
My understanding is that El Salvador as a whole has bought Bitcoin, put it on their balance sheet, and Bitcoin Beach is sort of like, no pun intended, but the beachhead market where folks are using crypto as transactional in nature. I think either they will be able to use it elsewhere in El Salvador, or they'll be able to use it in the meantime across the country. But Bitcoin Beach is sort of like the first, it's what got the captured the forefront of the news. That's where everyone is focusing on for their use cases. And then look at Miami too, right? Look, Miami right now is also doing some crazy stuff, crazy good stuff. And when it comes to accepting crypto, putting crypto on their balance sheet, like Miami coin, all those things, say what you will about the like jaw dropping, like wow effect of it. But it is a signal for where we're headed, I think, in crypto of institutional adoption.
So I will give you my take, which is kind of a hot take, but not really a hot take. It's a lukewarm take. My very lukewarm take is that Bitcoin is essentially, get ready for it, AOL. I think Bitcoin is the sort of the thing that got everyone interested in the technology. It's the first play in this. I think there's way too much emphasis on its price as well and whether it's going up or down. You know, you have the SEC getting more involved in the space. You have Ray Dalio making projections. Cathie Wood, it seems like everyone's really focused on Bitcoin now. But I think that ultimately, other assets will overtake Bitcoin and become much more important because of a number of issues. One is that it'll be cheaper to transact in them. I think that Bitcoin, again, is too early. Although it hasn't been hacked yet, there may be something there as well. I don't know. That's more on the security side. But I ultimately see it as sort of the first volley in what will be a fundamental shift in the monetary system will be in cryptocurrencies, not exactly in Bitcoin. One more point that I want to make on that as well is that I can see why the U.S. and many other countries will, essentially, as Ray says here, try to quash Bitcoin, especially because if you have a fully decentralized monetary policy and fiscal policy, you basically don't have any control. And essentially, a country is a policy making entity, and you can't make policy on something that is, again, so volatile, so decentralized, and so prone to manipulations and basically people making pronouncements that will swing the price either way.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. You can't really manage your economy if you don't have, you can't influence all of the money going on inside it. So the question is that a requirement? You know, you have to be able to control your economy, or you're going to have to let it go. And yeah, I don't see governments letting go.
Yeah. So. Although, it's funny. Going back to the case of El Salvador here. So El Salvador dollarized about, I don't know, some time ago. They dollar. So they're run on the dollar now. You get paid and you transact in dollars. And now they also want to go to Bitcoin as well. And I still don't understand why a sovereign nation will cede monetary policy and fiscal policy to the U.S. government or a DeFi platform like Bitcoin.
I think for a lot of places that do this, it's just a massive inflation. It's just unmanageable. Or I don't know if it's a related thing, but the corruption is just too out of control. So there's no way they can manage their own economy and stabilize their currency. So they just go to one that is already stable. And it takes that role out of the politicians and corrupt officials' hands. Mm. So they can focus on actual policy and not manipulation.
Interesting. Okay. But, all right.
Yeah, that's not a great reason. That's not a great you have serious governance issues when that happens. Back to billionaires on Bitcoin. And as you rightly pointed out, not just Bitcoin, but cryptocurrencies. But you're right. They do talk about it's a Bitcoin exchange ETF that they're working on over at ARK and with Cathie Wood. And they are the kind of the first ones through on a lot of these things. But I do agree the programmability and the functionality, the enterprise blockchain use cases will drive things like Ethereum and other programmable blockchains for the long term, because there's an actual use case, a business case, cost savings and things like that, not just digital gold. But if you don't believe us, there's other billionaires out there. It's not just these two that are battling it out in their opinion. There was an interesting article in the Wall Street Journal about Steve Cohen getting into a crypto quant fund, basically building the digital version of market making and trading and high frequency trading for cryptocurrencies.
Yeah, this is a story that's actually very near and dear to my heart as a diehard Mets fan. I hope he succeeds so he spends money on payroll.
Steve Cohen, the owner of the Mets, yeah.
Yeah. But it's interesting because, again, he's getting into basically the picks and shovels of this, right? I know that he's a market maker, but he's not really investing in Bitcoin or any crypto per se. He's just basically putting his weight behind the company that would help do some quant trading for it as well. And presumably either use the technology himself for his funds, or white label to other companies who are interested in quant trading. Sean, have you been exposed to any quant trading within crypto? Is this the first use case for this? Because I haven't seen this before.
There are a bunch of quant trading firms that have been doing quite well over the past few years, just given the bull run. And it's interesting. A lot of them use algorithmic trading models to basically predict where the market's going to go. They look at different indicators, and you can get onto so many different types of indicators, RSI indicators, Fibonacci, Elliott Wave, all that fun stuff that you hear about on Twitter. But really the interesting thing here is this is going to be right now it seems like really a battle of strong beliefs between billionaires, and it's easy to look at that and get distracted. But it's a very big news story, obviously, big stamp of approval by Steve Cohen, alongside other big billionaire icons like Paul Tudor Jones and others who are bought into crypto. I think the interesting question, though, to your earlier point, Steve, your earlier question is, I think it's less about which asset wins, whether it's Bitcoin or Ethereum. And it's more about, I think, identifying the fact that there's going to be a change in in the financial policy and the financial world over the next 10, 20, 30 years. Whether it's Solana that wins that, or Ethereum or Bitcoin or USDC or a stable dollar, digital dollar alternative, I think that the thing to focus on is less about who's going to win and more about how is it going to change. And I think all signs, like, and Steve Cohen's a good example of this, of smart money going into space, many strong signs are pointing to this change being a decentralized financial network. Again, that could be through the digital dollar or other stable coins, or it could be through Bitcoin or Ethereum. But the Steve Cohen biggest news, the news is big. And it's going to be, I think, a lot of people are going to follow. A lot of people are look at what Steve Cohen does. So big positive win for the space.
It is. And we should note here that in terms of scope as well, the cryptocurrency market is now a $2 trillion asset class, by the way. So it's not small potatoes. It's huge.
Yeah. Yeah. And he mentions that that's still has a lot of room to grow. There's radical changes coming up. I'm sorry. Radical is the name of this crypto quant firm, RADKL, that's going to do this. And like we said, providing market making. And, you know, when there's more money, when there's more institutional and high speed trading, it provides a lot more liquidity. And that's been kind of the problem for a lot of exchanges. Are these and the driver between some of these price shifts are lack of liquidity, lack of stable price services, and that provides a lot of arbitrage opportunities between exchanges, which I'm sure Steve Cohen will be happy to take advantage from. He famously ran into some regulatory trouble at SAC Capital. Mm-hmm. A few years ago, but now with managing 20 some billion dollars at 0.72. Yeah, when someone comes like this and provides that institutional support, that's going to make it easier for more and more players, more sophisticated products to jump in the space.
And then you also have to look at the numbers. So look at like an asset like Solana, for example, that can make 400,000 transactions per second. You know, that is like, you know, quantitatively stronger than so many other platforms. And if you look at that, you combine logic with the kind of the mission and the belief that crypto has, I think it's a really strong case for the fact that crypto is not only here to stay, but it's going to be growing rapidly over the next few years.
On that point, I hadn't even heard of Solana up until maybe 2-3 weeks ago. And I know that it's quadrupled in the past few weeks. What is Solana and how does it actually interact with Ethereum or compete with Ethereum?
Yeah, so Solana is an ETH killer, is what they call it. And the whole point here is that it's supposed to be like a better version of Ethereum. It's a decentralized blockchain, right? It's built to integrate with apps and developers work across the globe. It's open source, permissionless, right? Like a lot of other ETH competitors. But the thing that's really interesting is that it's one of the leaders in the DeFi space. So it is a decentralized app, a dApp. And the whole thing that makes it unique is that it brings to the table this whole concept of proof of history. And so it's slightly different than proof of work and proof of stake because the protocol is actually intended to serve small-time users and enterprise customers with proof of history. It actually is very low on its fees and taxes. So, and the biggest selling point is the transactions per second is amazing. That is probably the biggest selling point, is that it's purportedly faster than so many of these other networks in terms of actually sending the high number of transactions.
So the throughput is higher than you see with Bitcoin. It seems like it's a competing product to Ethereum as well. And the company, the token rather, launched I think a year and a half ago, and is now worth $48 billion. So that's an insane run.
Yeah, a big market cap. Yeah. The average cost per transaction is $0.00025. So what is that? One 250th of a penny per transaction.
I can afford that.
That's yeah. Something. Yeah. Yeah. It's, and, and very fast. And doesn't have that problem with proof of work. So it doesn't have that huge amount of computational carbon footprint that I'm sure is going to scare away more and more Bitcoin investors. These slash that to, you know, like a 10,000th of the energy use without giving up any of the security, which is the most important thing. And yeah, like Sean was saying, you can do like up to like 40,000 some transactions per second. So it can actually be used for commercial purposes. It's been getting some hype also with NFTs that can be programmed on it as well, which, you know, you think, okay, that's a toy, you know, that's not a big deal, but it really shows how you can program on it. You know, think of it as like the first computer system that just plays video games. Sure, it doesn't seem like much, but as computational power goes up and you can do more on it, it ends up taking more and more commercial applications as it creeps up. So I don't see NFTs as just kind of like an IP application or just something like a toy. I see it as the first, you know, beachheads for a lot of more use cases because it requires the security. It requires the stability. It requires all these things. Just because it's trading something that might be digital art, that doesn't mean that can't become real estate or securitized assets or something else down the road. So if they're going to work out those problems and the tools that they need on NFTs, I think that's great. Those are all going to be usable for a lot more use cases.
One quick thing just to point out. Earlier I mentioned that Solana, it can process 400,000 transactions per second. So that's what it, just to clarify, that's what it aims to get to. Right now, it's claiming a maximum throughput of around 50,000 transactions per second. And
which, by the way, it's still super impressive. I know that Visa processes about 1,700 or so per second and PayPal 193. So it's still a massive, massive increase.
Yeah. Yeah, it's big. I mean, and I think this is emblematic of the crypto industry, right? It's some of this. I think there are some really, really smart people in this industry who don't just settle for the status quo. They're not just saying like this is how things are. We're just gonna be okay with this, you know, low number of TPS, and this is what we're gonna do, and this is how we're gonna live. They're always looking for improving it and making it better. Some of the smartest developers globally are in this space, and it's an industry that like is, you know, doesn't take no for an answer. It continues to evolve, and who knows, Solana may be the not just an ETH killer, but it could be a Bitcoin killer, and you know, here soon, and then after Solana that could be one that's even faster. So it's just this evolution of this ecosystem of really, really strong people building amazing things.
Software is going to eat the world.
So many killers.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Mark Andreessen said that. Is that what
he did? Yeah, maybe 10 years ago or so in a blog post. It's come true. Yeah. I also like on the other side as well that there seems to be a lot of regulation and oversight coming to the space. I think the space is in bad need of this as well. So we've seen some statements from SEC Chair Gary Gensler about the need for regulation. And they announced that they hired a blockchain analytics firm called AntChain.ai to monitor and regulate the DeFi industry. And also on the other side, on the private side, MasterCard also bought a company called CipherTrace that is basically, again, providing analytics and fraud as well on the blockchain. So it seems like there's a tremendous interest now on both the regulation and the network side to kind of beef up how these things are seen and regulated.
Yeah, we've talked to some guests on the podcast about the need for the infrastructure, the analytics, the custodial services, the so many different information, backup, everything that's institutional investors and large asset managers have had for a long time with the traditional markets that need to get built up for the crypto world as well. So these ones like CipherTrace that track illegal and, you know, questionable assets and let you analyze what's going on the blockchain, and the ones that the regulators are using for the same purpose are absolutely a sign of the maturity, and that will have to keep developing. This is a great picks and shovels kind of story for new companies jumping in, or if you're looking to invest in a company. I mean, these are absolutely going to be growing and necessary. You know, we always see Chainalysis always gets mentioned too in a lot of these articles.
Yeah, they're a really cool company. And the Chainalysis and others, like the one you mentioned, John, are like, there's going to be a big need for folks to understand what's happening on chain. And I think a lot of these companies shed light into these topics.
I would trust that there's money to be made when Steve Cohen jumps in.
Anyone named Steve, really, I trust. Anyone named Steve.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, and we're seeing it again with the Goldman Sachs buy, right?
Yeah, yeah. They're picking up GreenSky for $2.2 billion. GreenSky is a buy now, pay later, focused on the home improvement space. And I think they're going beyond a little bit. They're not just a straight pay in four model, since these are bigger types of purchases. But still, the alternative lending, the breaking into a new market with a very simple, quick financing decision, and in a hot market in home improvements. And on Goldman Sachs' side, they're really beefing up their Marcus line. That brand is becoming a bit of a fintech powerhouse on its own.
It is, yeah. And I think there were indications that Apple may also offer a BNPL product as well. And we've interviewed a couple of BNPL companies in the past few weeks here. So it seems like this is a space that's still relatively hot, still getting a lot of attention here. Although John, actually, let's make this a bit more personal. You used a BNPL platform recently to buy tickets to a Giants game. What was your experience? What do you like about it? And what are your prospects, you think, for the entire industry?
It was so easy, even if I didn't need it. It was super convenient. So yeah, I would do it again. Actually, I'm going to do it. I was going to buy more baseball tickets for the next game, and it said I couldn't because I hadn't paid off that first one yet, which was pretty interesting. But it's just a few clicks on there, and you give them a little bit of information. If it had taken any bit longer than that, I probably would have just canceled it and paid for it right away. But yeah, I can definitely see the appeal and pretty convenient to have. I don't feel like it's something I have to worry about, since it kind of pays off and self-destructs. It's not like some credit line I have to manage or credit card. Sometimes I don't use for a while. I don't know if it's good anymore or what the story is, or asking for a credit line increase if you need that. It's just a simple thing focused on that purchase and you're kind of done. I was worried about keeping track of the payments. Like, oh, this is just one more. It's kind of like keeping track of all your discount cards or something at the market or at Walgreens or whatever. I'm like, oh, it's going to be one more thing I have to keep track of. But actually, I don't feel like that at all. They email and text me before the next payment comes in. So I don't feel I have to worry like, oh, I didn't leave money in the account for some reason. It's a pretty good notification of when the payment's coming out. So not a big deal. And I actually like it whether I needed to finance those purchases or not. But yeah, I can see the growth. What I don't know if I understand it are all these valuations. As convenient as that was, and as much as it might bite into the credit card business of so many banks and issuers, I don't know if Afterpay, for example, is really worth $29 billion. Mm-hmm. And I think PayPal, they just bought a Japanese buy now, pay later company for $2.7 billion. And now GreenSky just got a 50% premium over its last closing price before this deal was announced. But I guess they're seeing more of a strategic play than I am. You might trust any Steve, Sean, but when I see Goldman and making a move, I think it's probably for a pretty good reason.
Yeah, yeah. I haven't used the BNPL service yet, but I'm always on the market for trousers. I love pants and trousers, and I'm gonna definitely see what pants I can
You're
buy.
So old fashioned. How old are you, Steve? You use trousers?
Trousers, my son.
Work from home, right?
Yeah. I do work from home, but I still want to wear nice pants when I do go outside.
Gym trousers.
I want to feel fancy, you know. It's nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, but these valuations are doing amazing. So I don't know if it's too late to jump in. No, it's definitely not too late. This is focused just on home improvements. So there's a lot of areas that different buy now, pay later that you pointed out, we've talked to on the show, that are focusing on different markets and different approaches too. Like I said, it's not just a pay in four model anymore by a long shot. There's a lot of creativity going on in this space. You know, Marcus is already partnered with Apple. They're the ones doing the financing for a lot of purchases now. Well, through the Apple Card, at least. And they work with JetBlue and Amazon as well. They do a lot of the storefront financing now for Amazon sellers. So just the amount of the different niches getting filled in is pretty interesting.
Are any of these companies public or like companies that, you know, you as an investor look at? Obviously, this is not financial advice, but you as an investor find interesting, just like a buy now, pay later company that is doing well. I mean, Affirm is one, right? That's a big one. They're public.
That's a really good question. I'm actually a bit of a skeptic about this space as an independent company. I think it's more of a feature than a product. So I'll give you the example of Affirm, for example. So they went public, I believe it was less than a year ago or so. And they haven't done extremely well, I would say. I think their prices has fluctuated. I think it went up when they announced the partnership with Amazon a few weeks ago, but it's been sort of either stable or slightly on the downswing. But I do see how a service like this could add value to other things, which is why you see companies like PayPal and Square and Goldman Sachs, even with Marcus, getting into the space. So as an individual investor, I wouldn't buy shares in a BNPL company, but I would definitely would buy shares in other fintechs that are looking to acquire BNPL companies.
Interesting. So more of like a feature to a fintech to you, that's more interesting than like a whole company that's based on buy now, pay later, right?
Yeah, I just don't see, you know, you typically see a company provide a number of, you know, products and services. And this is kind of a very narrow product, right? Even though they may go after, you know, say the home renovation market, the people who want to buy trousers like me market, it's still very small markets. So I don't see this as a broad-based solution. I think it's more, again, of a feature that you add onto another platform that has many other use cases.
Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned that, Sean, because our Steve here on the FinTech Newscast has the same advice as Steve Jobs, looking at Dropbox as just a feature. Yeah,
I wasn't kidding. I'd follow any Steve, and Steve's a great name.
Apparently.
Love it.
Yeah, buy now, pay later, definitely a premium. Depending on what you think and of the value of Bitcoin and programmable and proof of history, proof of stake, some of those blockchain cryptocurrencies can be a little bit at a high volume or at a discount. We'll see what happens. But yeah, there's no shortage of money going into these things. So as long as the Fed keeps printing money, I think we're all going to be fine. They're all going to keep going up, apparently.
MMT, baby. MMT all the way.
Well, let's see if any of those predictions about prices being too high, too low, if Kathy Wood or Ray Dalio or Sean or Steve here are right about what's going to happen. You never know. Well, that's it. Things will always change. We'll follow up with more news next month. Please hit subscribe to keep up with the latest in fintech news. And thank you for listening.